Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, maybe YouTube for this episode. We'll see how it goes. Or you're listening wherever podcasts are sort, or you're listening on Fringe FM because we are existing there. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time, energy, and all that good stuff. We can't do this show without the amazing support of our sponsors. C60 Purple Power has been fantastic for us. They joined in February as a sponsor. I've been taking their product from the day they joined to this moment in time right now. Every single morning, I take a spoonful of C60 Purple Power. I feel great. It energizes your cell, all of your cells. It is a free radical scavenger. It is a naturally occurring, C60 is a naturally occurring molecule comprised of 60 carbon atoms that form something that looks like a hollow soccer ball. It is a free radical sponge with the ability to neutralize itself, to neutralize free radicals and reset itself again and again. It's the most powerful antioxidant known. The people that discovered it won the Nobel Prize for it. Kind of like the people that discovered ivermectin, you know, that stuff that secretly works, but nobody wants to talk about it. I don't know.
That horse dewormer?
Maybe go to c60purplepower.com, read up about it, see if you are interested, if it's something that works for you. And if it is, use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself a little bit of money. And since we're talking about getting prepped these days, we always are, thank you so much to My Patriot Supply. They've set up a free landing page for us to go and use. Just go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and see what they've got available for you. They've got 4 weeks supply of food. They have 3 months supply of food. They have all sorts of equipment and supplies that you would need. I suggest you start thinking about getting ready. Move yourself out of the way of these supply chain disruptions and all of this nonsense that we know is coming our way. Make the move. Prepare for your family. Take care of it. Don't make a big deal and freak them all out. Just buy it quietly, move it into the basement, all this extra food, and just be quiet about it. So you can do that at preparewithmacroaggressions.com. And of course, supporting our sponsors helps to support the show as well. Well, speaking of the show, one of my favorites, oh boy, every time I see his face and his twin bald head, it just makes me it just puts a smile on my face. He is a stand-up comedian and the host of Highway Diaries. That's Eric Hollerbeck. What's going on there, sir? How are you?
Hi, Charlie Robinson. What a great time. You've been on my podcast four times. First time I'm on Macroaggression. I appreciate it. Yeah, we have a good time.
I'm excited to have you on. I get phone calls from you from time to time. Celebrity children wind up leaving messages on my phone, you know.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah, I'm being terrorized by the trust fund brat of the World Economic Forum. His name is Klaus Schwab Jr. He's the son of this guy, Klaus Schwab. And so, like, he's got a fancy lockpick device from the Bundesnachrichtendienst, which is the German CIA. It's the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst. So he has, like, this lockpick device he breaks in my house whenever he wants. He uses my phone. He logs into my passwords and stuff like that. So if you get, like, a weird phone call at, like, 11 p.m., you know, Central, you know, I can't guarantee who's on the other side.
Yeah, I've gotten the calls. What's happening? What's happening these days? Where are we going to go here? Because you do all this amazing research. I mean, I know it's a funny combination to be a comedian and also be a researcher the way you are. I would imagine some of it probably helps your stand up. But the things that you and I wind up geeking out about, talking about all the time are not necessarily the funniest things in the world. But they're some of the most important things. And we've walked down this, this totalitarian tiptoe, as David Icke likes to call it, and we're always surprised that that there's new levels to this insanity. We go, wow, I can't believe they're doing this. I can't believe they're doing that. But the truth is, man, they've been using insane tactics against us for decades and decades. And in your research, I mean, we're talking about the stuff like what happened in Philly back in the 80s. And we're thinking now about, well, are we going to be trapped in our homes and the government's going to issue these mandates and what will they do? Will they let us out and everything? Yeah, that's great and all. And those are legitimate things to be worried about. But maybe we should also incorporate into our thinking the fact that it is also very possible that at some point, the police can just decide to use a helicopter and drop a fucking bomb on a residential city and deem that to be totally warranted and necessary. What the hell happened in Philadelphia back in
the 80s? I think humanity has a herd immunity to propaganda. And in May 13, 1985, the police of Philadelphia took a drastic counteraction against this. You see, a bunch of rebel rousers in the black community were very mad about Vietnam. They killed Martin Luther King. They killed Malcolm X. They needed a voice on the teletubes that wasn't lying to them all the fucking time. So they took things into their own hands, and on a shoestring budget, they mounted to their project a speaker that was going, listen, you got to watch out for these white brothers. You got to watch out. You got to listen, open your mind, this kind of stuff. And look, they killed every role model we've ever trusted. They've taken over. There's propaganda 24/7. The police of Philadelphia, who probably were fragged out from Vietnam and PTSD, maybe not making the best decisions, maybe had you know, if your country is only at war, then there's, you know, war becomes a profession. And then you think it makes sense to take an Acme bomb from Wile E. Coyote and float it above in a helicopter and target the speaker of the rebel rousing. They targeted the speaker. They dropped a bomb, exploded residential buildings in a building radius, and killed children, women, whoever happened to be home at that time. Putting a message out there that the government, the mind control warehouse, did not authorize. That is the steps that the government took in 1985. Oh, and this pussy millennials are getting banned from YouTube. Okay, they took a bomb in Philly, bro. This is war. This is war.
That's like the original drone strike on brown people, right? I mean, they've taken that concept and exported that to the Middle East. And I remember hearing about this, and I knew that they did it. And obviously, it sounds crazy. But what I didn't realize was that it was dropped on just a speaker, like not a person speaking, but like a stereo speaker.
It looked like a bullhorn that had one of those like circular bullhorn type mm-hmm. that was that they screwed up there. But yeah, that was the target. Shut them up. We don't like this.
Good Lord.
Oh my God.
I mean, I'm not surprised, as you mentioned, you know, like what they did to, you know, to Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. And anytime you start having an impact, you start waking people up and having, getting people to think for themselves or think at least in a different way about the world. Well, they just can't have that. Now, I could understand, obviously not advocate for this, but I can understand why they would do it after somebody as prominent as Martin Luther King or Malcolm X. And these people that were really on a national, even international scale, reaching tons of people. But like, to be like, no offense, but who fucking cares if there's a speaker in front of the projects in Philadelphia talking about this stuff? Is that how many people is that going to impact? You know, what, hundreds maybe that are walking by there? Certainly not millions. Why was that? What did they ever give an explanation for this massive overreach?
The police?
Yeah.
They had just had a mass murder. I mean, what? Shut up the darkies. I think that was their official statement. I used to live in New Orleans too, and there's a lot of people who are like, oh, the levees got blown up. You know, they blew up the levees. Okay, and I'd heard locals say this. It wasn't until I drove on St. Bernard Avenue. And when you go up St. Bernard Avenue, people will know what I'm talking about. There's one side of the street has all these incredible generational mansions on it. The other side of the street is favelas. Okay. So you just drive up the road and you go, huh? Oh, there's the levee. I wonder if they would choose this neighborhood who pays their taxes or this neighborhood. And it's that clear. That's the street that my other friend and told me that, you know, there were Halliburton or whatever mercenaries who, if someone was half drowning, they would just go,
really?
Just killing people, half drowning.
Wow. I mean, none of this would surprise me. I have such little respect for the authorities and for the governments and the things that they do. We know what they do to other countries. I mean, they act with impunity. I mean, we just talk. I mean, look at Blackwater, what they did in Iraq, just indiscriminately murdering, you know, what, 17 people, and just going, well, you know, it happens. Well, for them to do something similar like that in New Orleans, though obviously appalling and you know, warranting a massive investigation, I don't know that I would be too surprised by that. It seemed like that whole, you know, heck of a job, Brownie, that George Bush said with FEMA, when FEMA was botching this. It's almost as if they botch everything. And I think a reasonable explanation could be that they botch everything because their intention is to get it wrong. And so if I hear more stories of levees being blown up, instead of going, oh, that sounds insane, and I don't believe any of that, my default has now been switched to, I wouldn't be surprised. So, you know.
I mean, it personally affected me. Why? What the establishment doesn't want is a confident, competent populace. And how do you do that? Well, what they do in their own family is traumatize everybody. They traumatize everybody in their own family to go along with this narrative, you know? And I am not immune from these false flags. I mean, my dad was at 110 Wall Street during 9/11, which he was a couple of blocks away, but he was right downtown there. And, you know, even this past 9/11, my sister and I call each other and make sure that he's not alone on this day, because he's prone to watch cable news and they show the snuff film over and over again. That's like a Vietnam vet, like every day in Vietnam, every day we withdrew from Vietnam, you know, you're put in like a bamboo cage and like poke with sticks. You know, it's probably not good for the mentality of someone who's traumatized that day, but they want to keep re-traumatizing us to get us off track, to get us off of these topics, you know.
Yeah, it's extremely effective too. I mean, you can psychologically break, if you can break a person, you can collectively break a country too. And I would say that 9/11 with that film that they, you know, the never-ending showing of the snuff film as a form of trauma-based mind control, I never doubted that that was used as an integral component of the 9/11 narrative, was that everybody needed to see that over and over again to get them into a different brain function where they're now in a traumatized state. So, but that's just government being government, I guess. That's probably why I wind up speaking at anarchist conventions, because I see stuff like this and I think, well, this is fixable. A lot of this stuff we could fix, but yet we've got the wrong people in positions of power. And when you've got people that are going through the mental checklist of, you know, what should we do given this situation? And the answer is, I think the most reasonable thing for us to do is drop a gigantic firebomb on this neighborhood in Philadelphia. Well, then you're dealing with defective human beings, or if it's blow up levees or take down three buildings with two planes. I mean, these people see the world in a much different way than the rest of us do. And I think it has to do with their, with where their loyalties lie in terms of, with some of these people, maybe to a darker master that hides behind in the shadows.
Yeah, a dark passenger. These people are insane people. They the New World Order is dumb and scary and stupid and but and gay. They're like, no,
don't forget gay.
It's super gay. It's also super lame. Like, their ideas are stupid. Like, when I hear other people talk, I'm like, oh, you're a smart, confident person with love in their heart. And then when like Klaus Schwab, for example, talks, it's like, oh, you're an insane billionaire who's completely fucking out of touch. Like, when's the last time he went to a grocery store and like squoze an avocado, you know, and like, oh, you know what I mean? He just has servants do everything for him, kiss his ass, they poop in his hand. And he's like, oh, he's like, I push and you pull. You know what I mean? Like, servants are just pulling shit out of his, like, these people are so fucking out of touch and they keep running this program and it's unbelievable who's running things. Now, yeah. Can I just tell you this interesting story? You know, one spiritual teaching that comes from the Illuminati that I think about a lot is as above, so below. And I think we also, whatever's happening to them, we have to reflect it on a mirror of our own behavior and spiritually rise above what they're doing and think about what's going on in our lives. But I remember my sister had just given birth to her second child, and they were living in Union City, New Jersey. And I got a phone call from my sister late at night. Oh my God, we have rats. You know, rats are infecting the house. So they got a Terminator, exterminator, you know. And my sister called me and she was crying. And I was like, what's going on? She was like, they got rid of the rats. I was like, okay, that sounds good. And she goes, yeah, but the exterminator said that, you know, it was a single mom. And she just gave birth to a litter of rats, and they were just looking for a place to be out of the rain. Like, she had just given birth. And then it wasn't a rat infestation. It was a family moved into a rough neighborhood and they were seeking shelter. And then the exterminator came and killed everybody. And she was a part of that. She paid for the extermination of this whole single mom, you know? Right. And it's like, when you think in terms of that, you have to understand, like, give everything meaning, you know, live intentionally. You know, I guess that's what I'm saying. It makes you keener at looking at what the problem is of the agenda. Right before I moved from Edison, New Jersey to Austin, Texas, I called you when I was driving down to Austin, but yeah. My last day in Edison, I was at a bar, and I'm a weird guy. I find like the dregs of society. There's literally a local tramp that always hung out at this bar. And I liked him because he never lied to me. You know, that's the only, I don't care if you're homeless, if you're this, if you don't lie to me, keep it straight with me. So they were actively trying to kick the tramp out because he wasn't paying, blah, blah, blah. He was just lingering there. And I go, I'll buy him a beer. And they're like, no, we want him. And they're like, you'll buy him a beer. I'm like, I'll buy him a beer. And I threw a fiver down to tip him. I like this guy, you know, and I needed a, I don't know. I wanted to talk to somebody before I drove the next day. The bar starts playing. I got friends in low places. But I'm not a social fucking mathematician. I'm friends with my friends because I like them, not because of the majority of my other friends like them too. You know, I have discernment. And so like when a politician is lying to me or anything like that, I go, no, you're a scumbag. Oh, this guy's making sense. Like, listen to your family members, get your ear on the ground of the dirtbags in your life, see who's lying to you. And then it's easier to see when these politicians lie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's never ending and constant. And it's funny that you can find honesty from a homeless guy, but you can't find honesty from somebody that has everything, you know, that has everything given to them or has, you know, has a job in Congress and they're making a great salary and they have a built-in retirement fund and they don't have vaccine mandates and all that stuff. And they're just full of themselves and pathological liars. And yet you find somebody that has nothing. In a maybe in a monetary sense, he has nothing, but has everything in terms of integrity that's intact. And yeah, I'm with you, man. I'd much rather hang out with somebody like that than some asshole in Washington D.C. who wants to is only talking to me because he's made some calculation in his head about whether or not he thinks I'm going to vote for him or not. So
yeah, and that's why I hated living in L.A. after a while. Because I found everyone was a social mathematician. Oh, I'll be 40% friends with that person because that person's on this TV show. I'll be 15% friends with that because they got the hot girlfriend with the big tits. I'll be 12%. And it's like, I'm from Jersey. It's like, who do you like? And they're like, what? No, who do you like? Huh? No, I'm 15% friends with this person because of... Ugh.
And I lived in Los Angeles for 20 years. I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. You're sitting down talking to someone and they're talking to you, but they're looking over your shoulder to see who's walking in the door and you have to go, yeah, well, you'd rather be talking to someone else. Let me get out of here. You can go talk to that other person. So,
or that person sees me talking to this person who doesn't, this person talks shit about. In Jersey, we were direct. Oh, if you talk to my fucking girlfriend like that again, I'm going to put your fucking head in the toilet. You got me? Please. It was clear. At least there's clarity there.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the directness of the Jersey people. I watch Sopranos, right?
That's basically a documentary. So when corporations are pathological dirtbag liars, and they talk to a government, it kind of sounds like this. This is from the Reese Report.
In Argentina, Pfizer requested that the government pay all compensation for any lawsuits that successfully win against Pfizer vaccine damages. Argentina's parliament responded by passing a new law stating that Pfizer needs to at least pay for its own negligence. Pfizer rejected this, after which Argentina offered to amend the law to define negligence more clearly to include only vaccine distribution and delivery under negligence. But Pfizer still wasn't happy and demanded the law be changed. Argentina refused, but later agreed to buy an international insurance policy to pay for future vaccine lawsuits. This was not specific enough for Pfizer. They asked for an additional indemnity from civil cases, specifically that the company would not be held liable for rare adverse effects or for its own acts of negligence, fraud, or malice. Pfizer then demanded the nation's bank reserves, military bases, and embassy buildings as some sort of collateral against future vaccine damages.
So they wanted liability from their own malice and demanded the government buildings of Argentina as collateral if they get sued too much.
The government of Argentina should have just bombed them.
I'm telling you. I mean, wake up, people. They're like, fight back.
I would be the worst. I'd be the worst president. That guy from the Pfizer guy comes in here and he's like, I demand that you indemnify me. I'd be, you know, like the button under your desk. I'd be hitting the button that opens the trap door and drops that guy into the pit of alligators. I'd be like, we're not doing any of that stuff. Get the fuck. How dare you come in here and demand all that stuff? And what a bunch of cucks Argentina is, right? And listen, to be fair, it's not limited to Argentina. I think that Pfizer's been running this scam with a lot of countries, but the balls on them to go in there and ask for these things and then just never be settled, you know, never be fine with it. What a bunch of fucking assholes.
And no, I can I have an insurance policy against my own psychopathic malice? Oh, right. And by the way, can we use government property for mass graves? I'm just asking for a friend. And yeah. Also, can we, it's like, what the fuck?
I don't know. Listen, I mean, there's part of me that actually is like impressed with their brazenness of asking for these things. I mean, it's one of those like, hey, you're never going to get it if you don't ask for it. I guess Pfizer probably has, they have ways to make you comply. But I mean, I understand what they have ways to make us comply, but to make entire countries, I've heard that in Israel, the stipulation with the Pfizer vaccine was that there was a gag order that you can't discuss vaccine damages for at least 10 years. Like, why do we have to have policies like this in place if we're talking about a pharmaceutical company that is supposed to be improving your health, not killing you? Why is it such a push to be indemnified against all these potential lawsuits? Unless, of course, you know that your product is complete and utter garbage, which it is.
And that's like saying, hey, let's go on a first date, beautiful lady. Can you sign this, like, I won't rape you clause? And can you sign that I get like 45 blowjobs for the first date? And can you fill out, let's go buy duct tape together. Let's go buy shovels together and a body size garbage bag. Hey, can you know what I mean? Can you put a life insurance on yourself and then double it for rape? I'm asking for a friend.
Right.
It's like, do you need enough red flags going into a business relationship between Pfizer and Argentina? I mean, Jesus.
Well, but even the you know, like the hypocrisy is staggering because you've got like the CEO of Pfizer, I guess Pfizer North America, I'm not sure, is like, yeah, I'm not vaccinated. I'm not getting that. I'm not.
I wonder if I have a clip of him saying that.
I'm 59 years old, in good health. I'm not working in the front line. So my diet is not recommended to get vaccinated.
It's not recommended to get vaccinated, but so it's mandated for the peasants, but yeah, it's not recommended for him because he talks to the real doctors.
Oh, recommended? I'm sorry. I didn't know recommended was on the table still. All I'm hearing is get this shot or you lose your job. Get this shot or you don't get to see your kids. Get this shot or you can't go to a sporting event. All these things. I don't seem to remember the recommend. It's recommended that you get this shot or else you can't go into a sporting event. I hear you can't go in unless you get this shot. So what the fuck is this guy talking about?
Well, came back from Argentina. He was looking at grave sites and grave liners, and then he comes back and he gets interviewed by, you know, one of the surface monkeys with a camcorder and a press credential, and then he's just honest accidentally, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, there's part of me that respects his honesty. You know, I'm not taking it. You know, it's not recommended for me. You know, the honesty is missing in politics. You know, you've got sleepy Joe Biden and everything that comes out of his mouth is a total lie. But then like the antithesis of that is his son Hunter, and everything that comes out of his mouth is actually true, which I kind of appreciate. Yes, he's high on crack cocaine when he's saying all these things, but at least it's on video and it's true. So more truth in politics, I think, would be a little bit nice, right?
Yeah, and I saw his sex tape. I'm a pervert. I'm a fan of celebrity sex tape. So I saw it, but, you know, I get jealous because it's like it's girthy. It's wider than mine. It's longer than mine. He's doing crazy. He's not even charming. Like, I put a lot of energy and my charm,
you're doing it wrong. Yeah. No, you know? Hunter knows. Hunter has a lot of experience with this.
But then he's asked about his sex tape, and the answer he gave is hilarious.
is found. It does not specifically talk about your laptop.
Yeah.
Was that your laptop?
For real? I don't know.
I know, but you know that's this.
I really don't know.
Okay. You don't know yes or no if the laptop
was. I don't have any idea. I have no idea.
So it could have been yours.
Of course, certainly. There could be a laptop out there that was stolen from me. There could be that I was hacked. It could be that it was Russian intelligence. Russia. It could be that it was stolen from me.
And you didn't drop off a laptop to be repaired in Delaware?
Not that I remember at all. At all. So we'll see.
We'll see if they catch me. I don't remember doing that. I mean, I'm blacked out most of the time, you know?
This is an interesting defense strategy here. It could be me. I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, listen, I've been high. I've been drunk. I've been out. I've never been those things while simultaneously deciding, you know, today is the day I need to take my laptop into the computer guy to get it fixed. I would think, and that's just me, of course, maybe I'm projecting onto Hunter Biden here, but I would think that the taking the computer to the computer guy that fixes it, that might be a sober moment, right? Like, doesn't seem like it gets more fun when you add crack. That seems like it would just be less crack activities that you could do because you are busy getting this laptop to the computer fixer.
I just imagine that he put so much weird porn on it that the spam sort of clogged it down, you know, and he kind of forgot what was on the hard drive. And they probably even, like I'm saying, you got to squeeze the avocados in the grocery store. He probably had an assistant, you know, Ukrainian that did crack with him the night before. He's like, oh yeah, my computer doesn't work anymore. Can you go drop this off? Like, he probably had a middleman do it. He probably didn't drop it off himself, I would imagine. Just, it seems more like he's a lazy drug addict. That's what it seems like to me from the outside. I don't know.
Is he going to be a guest on Highway Diaries?
I can't pull those strings, but I bet Klaus Schwab Jr. can kind of figure it out. But
yeah, man, because that's an interview we need to see.
I know. As above, so below. My training is my whole thing, Charlie Robinson.
Is that the name of Hunter Biden's sex tape? As above, so below.
Yeah, I think so. Just got that's his MK Ultra programming mixed with Illuminati messaging. It just like every. I don't remember if I was there. I don't know where I am. The movie industry, they need a blockbuster, and I learned very early that, you know, there's something called cross collateralization, meaning like if a movie studio puts out 20 movies, three might make hundreds of millions of dollars and kind of give welfare to the art films that really break even or have a, like lose $1 million each. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so in this way, it's a great way to the big blockbusters kind of prop up the whole movie industry and they try to move it around. So they need this. And, you know, the common cold, that's a hacky premise. But what if we could rebrand the common cold and then we would have a blockbuster antidote for it, you know?
And that's where you're going with this. I like it a lot. This is your decade plus working in Hollywood has made you uniquely qualified to come up with ideas for how they can make a pandemic blockbuster the way they might make a movie blockbuster. Keep going with this line of thinking.
So they had a big blockbuster for the military industrial complex. Oh, it's called 9/11.
Okay. Yeah.
And then what did they...
I didn't like 9/11 2 Electric Boogaloo. I thought the writing was kind of shoddy, but whatever.
It's hacky, you know, and they just do the same thing over and over again. And they're so obvious with what they're doing. So they blow up these towers and then what do they replace it? The building they replace it with is a syringe.
Yep.
To message to the, we're so much smarter than you. You cannot know what's right in front of you, you filthy peasant morons. So we'll even have the next false flag as an injectable, and we'll put a big needle in the sky of Manhattan, replacing the last false flag we perpetrated on. This is our blockbuster.
It does look like a syringe. There is no doubt about that. I have recently started to think that these, you know, listen, if it's just some guys at a construction company that decide to build a new tower, that's, you know, whatever. And it happens to look like a syringe. But given that these maniacs love to rub it in your face, they're planning things a decade or two in advance. I wouldn't be surprised if this was part of the agenda. Maybe it's a reach. I don't know, but it does seem like it's I'm assuming that the building is then filled with mostly poison.
Yeah, it's probably got the CIA and NSA in there. Right. Writing a good joke, you can like spiritually advance. And, you know, when I have a new joke that really does well, and then an audience member will come up to me and say, "Hey, good joke," and stuff like that, I'm like, I think I like spiritually advance the one's vibration. I'm trying to poke a hole in truth from an angle or shine a light on something that nobody's seen before. And an original screenplay could do the same thing, you know, Good Will Hunting. You know, I probably like spiritually advanced. It made people more emotionally intelligent. It was very good original screenplay. I mean, the movie Borat for me was hilarious. Great. I think it won an Oscar for best original screenplay. And not that I'm a big fan of the second movie, but the first movie was great. But I'm just saying that it's hard not to be a hack. It's to do the same Hegelian dialectic bullshit over and over again. Is people that aren't creative. And to me, it's obvious.
Is that, I wonder, like part of, I mean, we kind of joke about this, but I think there might be something to it. You know, like the non-human entities that live on this earth, and people go, you know, we talk about reptilians, we talk about these things. If we can allow ourselves to get a little bit weird, and I like to from time to time when it comes to this stuff, I mean, one of the components that they talk about with these lizard, you know, jokingly lizard people, but really non-human influences, is this lack of an ability, a lack of creativity, obviously a lack of empathy and things like this. But it's like all the things that make us unique, interesting individuals, our creativity, our personality, the way we see things, those things are all gone from in this realm of others that are secretly controlling the world. If in fact they are secretly controlling the world, they have a reputation of having a lack of creativity, that they sort of need us. So I know you're joking about, like, you know, they're hacky in their writing of the scripts and everything, but you're also, I also know that you're being serious in the sense that it is true that they don't get too creative with their plans. They tend to run the same plays over and over again until we either figure out how to use them, or it becomes so obvious that they have to mix it up. So they are writing bad sequels, and yet we're still, you know, listening to them on some level. And it's frustrating to me that a lot of people don't kind of wake up to this, to we're doing it again. Like, we're, you know, like, oh, we might need to lock down again. It's like, this is the sequel to the first shitty movie that we watched in 2020 that was so bad and had all these plot holes. And yet you're going to go buy a ticket to the second movie. What the hell is the matter with you?
Yeah. The Operation Delta, Operation Foxtrot, it's like, I saw this shit before. It sucked. Didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes gave it like a 13%. 2020 sucked.
And then when they're so desperate, they just go, ivermectin is a horse dewormer. You know, I've been to a petting zoo. I touch avocados. I squeeze my Italian grandma from Sicily, you know, with big swinging tits, showed me how to touch an eggplant, showed me farm animal. You know, I'm aware of my surroundings. I know what a horse is. And they give you this one petting zoo, a bag of carrots. And we were shoving carrots in a horse mouth. It would eat the carrot. That's horse food. Carrots are horse food. The level of propaganda, it's just ridiculous.
But then, you know, they tried to hang Joe Rogan out to dry on this stuff. And it was embarrassing to me, because that's a guy that, if you want to come at him, that's fine, but he's funnier than you. He's probably smarter than you. He's got a bigger audience than the mainstream media, and he's got the ability to make you look really stupid if you come at him sort of half cocked. And that's what the mainstream media did. I mean, I was embarrassed for them. And that doesn't happen that often, but the Rolling Stone articles about, you know, Oklahoma City or Oklahoma ERs or overcapacity can't even serve gunshot wound victims because there's all these people in here ODing on horse dewormer. It's like, how fucking stupid do you have to be to first of all, to write that story, but second of all, to believe the story? You know, and just because it's in Rolling Stone, and when did Rolling Stone turn into such a shitty organization? I mean, I used to think that they were on the front lines. They were talking about edgy stuff, and now they're just talking about the same old shit as everybody else.
It just makes me disgusted. Can I talk about cross collateralization in the movie industry a little bit?
Yes.
You know The first producer that actually paid residuals?
Who?
Harvey Weinstein.
Really?
But you had to earn that money, you know? So I'm dead serious when I say this. Like, he literally, you know, would pay every time. He made sure that every time your shitty movie went on HBO again, you got a check, $300, all that, you know, he was good about that. He was good about that. That's why he wasn't just paying millions of dollars for the script. He was supporting the whole industry. That's why it was so hard to take him down. That's why it took so long, because the industry was supported on the pig monster.
Can I tell you a funny story about that? Because my business partner was friends with Matt and Ben when they were writing Good Will Hunting. They were staying in his apartment when they were writing it, like back before they were obviously famous. They had done some, I think they'd done Clerks or whatever, but they were writing this script and they kept submitting it to Harvey. And he was like, yeah, I like it, but make some changes. And they'd submit it again. Yeah, I like it, but make some changes. Yeah, I like it. You know, this kept going on and on. And they decided, I don't think he's reading it. I don't think he's actually even reading the script. So they decided, okay, well, he told us to make some changes. We'll see if he's reading the script. So they changed the Robin Williams scene where he's having this real legendary breakdown, you know, with Matt Damon, and they're having this big, you know, they're hugging and crying, and it's like this big emotional scene. And they rewrite it so that Robin Williams, in the middle of that, just gets down on his knees and starts sucking Matt Damon's character's dick in this. And they're like, and then they submit it and they get called in. They say, come on in, you know, talk about the script again. And so they go in there and they're like, you know, they're waiting for the same answer. And he's like, look, guys, I really like the script. It's everything, you know, it's pretty good. Take the blowjob scene out and we got a deal. And they're like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. We got a deal. So he was reading it the whole time.
Well, or he just did a search find on Movie Draft for blowjob. You know,
maybe
standard process.
Maybe, but so Holly, you know, obviously we know Hollywood is a cesspit filled with, you know, scumbaggy guys that can't get laid unless they're producers. So, I mean, nobody's lining up to fuck Harvey Weinstein unless there's something in it for you, like a part in the movie. I mean, the guy is a troll and a scumbag. Everyone knows that. But in Hollywood, it's like a different, it's like you're operating with a different set of rules and a different set of incentives and a different set of values. And it's like playing a video game where all of the default settings to this game are completely backwards from the normal reality. So then you just have to kind of learn to navigate through that pit. I never worked in Hollywood. I lived in LA, but I never worked in Hollywood, but I knew plenty of people that worked in Hollywood and they did not have good things to say about it. You know, it's a magnet to all these, you know, wide-eyed people that come in. They say, oh, I want to come in and be a star. And you know, it's like that Welcome to the Jungle song where it's sort of in the video along with it. You know, it's like, yo, you come to Hollywood and you better watch out, man, because there's a price to be paid. If you want this, you can taste the bright lights, but you won't get them for free, you know, as they say in the song. And so it's I think it's a really dangerous place for people to get comfortable, because it, you wind up normalizing insanity in a way that you probably shouldn't. I mean, in a real healthy business relationship, you don't write a script, you don't change the script to have a blowjob scene in there. But in Hollywood, you can do that because the guy that you're handing it into is the type of guy that can appreciate that, the ballsiness of you to do that, and also appreciate the humor that's a part in a movie that obviously doesn't fit within the confines of the script that they've written. So it's a dangerous place. I'm glad you're not there anymore. I'm glad you're not actively sort of working in that. Of course, you've gone into a much healthier environment, which is stand-up comedy. Good luck.
Yeah, everyone I meet is just a degenerate in that. But at least they're honest. I mean, we either bomb in front of each other or kill in front of each other, and there's an honesty to it. It's not, yeah. You know, and what I realized about Hollywood was we talked on Highway Diary about the show I worked on where everyone was a Freemason. And then I realized that Michael Aquino has more power in Hollywood than the best writer in Hollywood, meaning like, the Department of Defense has so many crimes, so they'll only greenlit movies from people that have gone through initiative rites, where what do? You ritualistically sin. And then as you do the worse and worse and worse and worse ritual sin, what I learned from William Schneblin's book, Masonry is Behind the Light, is what you're promised is power. Like, you're promised spiritual gifts, you're promised telekinesis, you're promised the psychic abilities at first sinning on each thing. And they say that you'll have a dark passenger enter into you and a spirit guide to whisper you secrets. But that what it is could be, in this weird way to think about it, is demonic possession. So now you think that you're in control and it's your will, but these dark other realm entities enter you and use you as a vessel, use you as their puppet. So you wonder why Hollywood is redundant. It's because it's the same freak spirit that keeps going in and occupying these vessels so that they don't have their higher purpose, like a connection with their higher purpose, you know? And so when I'm on stage and I'm writing my own jokes and I say them exactly how I want, there's no go between me and my creativity, between me and my so I was waiting so hard. I got my whole master in screenwriting. I got a 4.0. I got two scholarships, and I love screenwriting. And if you go to erichollerbach.com, there's a screenwriting tab. You can look at all little blurbs about all the screenplays I wrote. I'm really trying to. I would love if Hollywood would have a look at one of my scripts. There's some blowjob scenes. It'll be cool. It'll be fun. But they mostly make fun of this whole system that I just became disgusted with, you know? Yeah. Like, I have one script called The Bonesman of the NSA, all about how the purpose of the National Security Agency is to get dick pic blackmail on senators to then use leverage to get the policies they want. So it's like, that's the whole purpose of the NSA. And I think that that's more truthful, and it's so, you know, ridiculous but funny. And then the guy who breaks through the system is Dick Wiener. You know, every time Dick Wiener puts his dick pic on Google Images, his ratings go, like, his Google hits go up. So he's like like they can't get him, and so he becomes president. But anyway, so
well, the problem that you had with Hollywood is that you did all the academic things and all of the things that you're supposed to do. You got great at writing, and you went through schooling, and you've got all these things, but you weren't part of the secret societies, as Newt Gingrich described about Donald Trump when he first came into office. He said he's going to have a hard time because he's not in the club. He's not a member of the secret societies. And we know that Hollywood is run by pedophile, lunatic Satanists. And I know that that's kind of like a joke for a lot of people, but really, like, look into it. And there's a lot of these guys that are directing Disney movies or Disney TV shows are convicted pedophiles. And guys get out of jail after serving a couple years for some, you know, diddling little kids and things like that. And then Disney rehires them. So it's like I think in Hollywood, in order to succeed, you have to do the exact opposite of everything that you would logically think that you should do to succeed in a normal job. You just become the worst person, go to the parties, do all that. And hopefully that will line you up for a successful career in Hollywood, but God forbid you go get college degrees and get actually accredited as a legitimate screenwriter. Well, yeah, you might you might get a job writing commercials somewhere.
But I loved how real my experience was, because not only was I at the University of New Orleans, but really what I was doing was I was getting student loan money to do stand up with Black people every night. That's what nice. I loved. But they knew me so well. Like, they knew me so well. So, like, I would get a girlfriend. I would start killing it. One of my friends is like, oh, looks like Eric Hollaback got his groove back. Because I'm walking on stage. I'm so confident. I'm just like, and then I get cheated on or whatever would happen. And I would just be so depressed. I'd be on stage like, we're all going to die soon. Everything sucks. And, like, they would be like, uh-oh, here we go.
They're and like, oh, man, he's channeling Stephen Wright. They're like, no. Not really.
No, they know. They would know, because then I would, then I got this other girlfriend. I was taking her around to my friend's house. We're watching UFC fights together. Then I'm like killing again. And then she cheats on me. And then I'm miserable. Then I take like a week off because I'm like crying in my apartment. Like, they knew me so well. And like, this community really taught me how to be funny, because it's like, it's truth. You just say what's true. And there's some kind of, like I say, there's a herd immunity to propaganda. There's a herd immunity to liars and bullshit. Like, it is evolutionarily advantageous to spot a liar,
And stand-up comedy gives you this license to talk about the truth in a way that a lot of people don't get. You know, when you go up on stage, I mean, yeah, it can go, obviously, it can go horribly wrong too, but you give the audience permission to laugh at the absurd, and also maybe permission to laugh at things that are mean, and also permission to laugh at things that are actually true, but we don't want to talk about it. So it just reminds me of, like, in the medieval times, they had the court jester was allowed to say the things about the king that no one else could say, because it was under the guise of comedy. So you guys get like a nice little get out of jail free card. Unless you're Shane Gillis or somebody, and to say the things that you think that are probably the truth as well, in a way that deflects and allows it to come out and people to have it enter their brain, but at the same time not be throwing beer bottles at you, at least yet. Maybe you've had a beer bottle thrown at you. I don't know.
Maybe a plastic cup, but I will say this, imagine this, you're someone like Adam Schiff, you're one of the most disgusting people in the world. Nancy Pelosi basically has footage on you doing every which demonic, act, legal and unlegal. So you're a controlled person. And then, you go, imagine this, you're drinking blood in a Masonic ritual. You're just going through the motions. You don't even love Satan anymore. You're just going, and you're watching the fake president that you put through, that you made sure to fudge the election so that he got through. He's bumbling through speeches. He's just, then you go to the next ritual, and the woman's dancing with the snake, and then they put it on the rosy cross. And then, you watch another kid get decapitated, and then you just go back to parliament, and then you do more corruption, and it has to just weigh on you. And that's why I just feel like they're just sad, like the carnival barkers of the New World Order. Like, the message is dark. The message is sad. They're a bunch of sad losers,
Yeah. Well, I mean, we see this with the World Economic Forum. We see these guys coming out. They've got everything, right? They fly to Davos in their private jets, and they talk about running the world, but they look unhappy to me. They look like,
you know, We'll get to that in a second. I just, can I just play this again?
Not specifically talk about your laptop.
Yeah.
Was that your laptop?
It's real. I don't know.
I know, but you know that's, this.
I really don't know. Okay. The answer.
So you don't know yes or no if the laptop
was. I don't have any idea. I have no idea.
So it could have been yours.
Of course, certainly. There could be a laptop out there that was stolen from me. There could be that I was hacked. It could be that it was the, that it was Russian intelligence. It could be that it was stolen from me.
And you didn't drop off a laptop to be repaired in Delaware?
Not that I remember at all.
It's just, there's just sad now. You know, I almost feel bad for him. Can you imagine living like that?
No, but listen, to be fair, if I had endless supplies of Chinese money and mountains of cocaine at my disposal, who's to say? Who's to say I wouldn't be putting on my whitey tidies and taking pictures with feather boas and hookers in hotel rooms? I mean, who am I to judge, right?
I'm jealous. I mean, the framing, you should see the girth. Like, the cinematography was good on this, and like, I'm jealous. I don't know. But they're out of touch, you're right. You know, the Agenda 2030 people, the Davos people, they're out of touch, you know. I just want one of them to be honest. You know, I know one of them is honest, you know, but it's like in professional wrestling, like, he just comes across as like the bad guy, the heel. One guy is honest, and it's Klaus Schwab Jr., you know, the trust fund Brad of Dub. By the way, he's coming over soon. Oh,
God.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to drop off blood, and then he always leaves things at my house. He parks a UFO on the roof, and you know what I mean? I don't know what he's doing, but...
it's a mess these days. What do you have planned for the tail end of this year? How's comedy looking for you? Are you able to get out and get on the road and do this, or are they making the dictate so difficult with all these ridiculous mask mandates and vaccine passports and all this crazy shit that those maniacs in Davos want to install? How's it working for stand-up, you think?
You know, I'll be honest, I'm very jealous of Klaus Schwab Jr. Like, his career is blowing up. Like, for example, my home club is the Romo Room. That's my home club. And Sam Tripoli was in town back in April of 2021. And I put my time in at the Romo Room. I'm there at their open mics. I was hosting the other weekend for Jimmy Schubert. Like, that's my home club. And Eric Hallback was trying to get, with all my insider connections, on Sam Tripoli's show. I was flatly rejected. Klaus Schwab Jr. walks right in to the green room. You know, who knows how he even got in there? Trying to sell people Adrenochrome, talking about his daddy, Santa Klaus Schwab. And he does all four shows. And now he's playing Vegas. He's doing the 500th episode of Tinfoil Hat in Las Vegas. October 16th. Well, there's two shows. You know, there's two shows, 7:30 and 9:30 or something like 7 and 9:30, something like that. I'd love to get on the show. I can't get on the show. There's a fucking the Thrive Brew House, 5 minutes from my house. Okay, Charlie Robinson. I have three specials on YouTube: conspiracies and dick jokes, fart porn and beer halls. It's a medical device. I shot them on tour in 60 venues. Eric Hallback cannot play the Thrive Craft Brew House 5 minutes from my street, but Klaus Schwab's doing Vegas. You know, so it's just like, where's the fairness?
The world is not fair. It's a very unfair place. It is. It's a damn shame of it all.
But I look up to other artists, heroes of mine, to tell me the truth about stuff. And there's this wonderful quote from John Lennon I'd love to play here.
Oh, sure. Go for it.
Society is written by insane people for insane objects and objectives. And I think that's what I assessed when I was 16 and 12, way down the line. But I expressed it differently all through my life. It's the same thing I'm expressing all the time. But now I can put it into that sentence that I think we're being run by maniacs. Well, maniacal means ends. If anybody can put on paper what our government and the American government, etc., and the Russian, Chinese, what they are actually trying to do, you know, and what they think they're doing.
I'd be very pleased to know what they think they're doing. I think they're all insane.
Did someone shoot that guy for trying to say stuff like that?
I believe they did.
I think someone tried to shoot that guy.
Yep. Well, he was ahead of his time. He was talking about things that are inconvenient for the establishment. He had a massive audience, and of course, he was correct in saying that we are run by maniacs for maniacal purposes. I wonder what John Lennon would say if he were alive today, taking a look at this insane world that we've become a part of.
Yeah, just watching the wheels turn around of the corruption. But Charlie, I don't want to be rude or anything, but yes. I just feel like I'm going to go now because I could just tell. I just heard some anti-graphitic device on my roof. And so that can only mean one thing, that Klaus is on his way.
Go let him in then.
But I just want to play this clip to smooth it over. Now, one German I really respect is, not all Germans are bad. I was an exchange student, and the exchange student that came to my house was kind of a shithead. But then I was friends with this other German exchange student called Robert Arts, who was hilarious and a great guy. We're still friends. Not all Germans are bad. And Dr. Rainer Fulmisch is on my team. I know that for sure. And he has said this.
That this has happened and that there are these world elites who have their ideas, the fight is on. And so do you feel positive about the fight back against huge entities that are bringing this down on humanity?
Yes, I do feel positive about this because the other side, Mr. Global, as I prefer to call them now in accordance with the phrase that Catherine Austin Fitz is using. The other side is not very smart. I mean, they do have a few people who have a certain type of intelligence, but as far as what we call social intelligence is concerned, as far as instincts are concerned, as far as empathy is concerned, as far as emotions in general are concerned, they don't even have access to it. And even though we may only be 20%, maybe 30% of the world over, this is more than enough to turn the tide.
Hello, my patrons. How are you today?
Oh, Jesus. For fuck's sake. Hello, Klaus Schwab Jr.
It smells like a loser comedian in this apartment right now.
Oh, yes. Of course. Well, it's good to see you again after you dropped in on our Union of the Unwanted episode a couple of weeks ago to tell everybody that we smelled like Shaijin and all of that good stuff. So please, at least you've got the floor here for the next couple of minutes here. So tell us what the plan is there, Klaus.
Well, it smells like loser in here. I can tell you this. I mean, Illich, I met him when I was a student, very, very long ago, time ago. And then I was kind of proud of him. He would get like good looking girls, but you should see what he pulled into the house the other day. It was disgusting. I was packing adrenochrome with ice, and he comes back in the apartments. And there was a woman who looked like a pig and a donkey at the same time. And she was really, really fat. And if a pig looked like this, I would not eat its bacon. And he is like, I am in love with her. She is my girlfriend. And I was like, oh, boy, have you fallen for this. But then she looked at me with like her one good eyes. And she says all the time, she goes, I know I'm not good looking, but I will make suckings on the first date. And then the skies parted. And it was like the song of the silence. So suddenly, she was very beautiful to me. It brought a tear to my eye. She knew her place in the world. And that was very emotional for me. But then she looked ugly again when the lights go on. So,
well, you and your father are a very ugly group of people running the World Economic Forum. We know who you are.
How dare you?
We're on to you. You don't scare us. We recognize you in your... and your plans for society, and you guys can go fuck yourselves, even with your German accents. We're not afraid of you.
You should be. It is very smart to be afraid of me. Very wise to be afraid of me.
Oh.
Very soon we will own everything, and you will own nothing. We are very nice like this.
Yes, yes, we we know all about it. That's Eric Hollerbach. He is the host of the Highway Diaries, and his alter ego, Klaus Schwab Jr., can be
found. Can I say something?
Oh, please, yes, go ahead.
My business, and people should feel bad for me, because my adrenochrome business is in a little trouble right now. So I was making fresh press adrenochromes the other night from Kindles that I make kidnappings for in the van for. Mm-hmm. And then someone, a scientist, made testings on it. And it's had, you know what was in my adrenochrome now?
No, please tell me.
They're glyphosatings. Glyphosate,
yeah. Yeah.
Bloody roundup that we put in the baby food.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
And then when they make testings on it, now I'm losing business because they found glyphosate in my other. So now, do you know where I can find like the Amish babies, like Amish funds to making?
They live in Pennsylvania, I believe.
Oh, Pennsylvania.
Leave the fucking Amish alone. They've got enough. Well, they're going to be the only people left on this planet at the rate we're going. So I would suggest you leave those poor Amish people alone and don't let them, don't go infecting them with your insanity. They've got bad haircuts already. They don't need your help.
Oh, I'm, you know who is the biggest loser I've ever met is a guy called Ellis Hollerbach. He is a loser. He's a, if there was a class, what is the class system in America? I don't know what it is. What is below incel? He's like somewhere around there. Loser. Yes. Can't believe you're making speakings with him.
Well, Klaus, since I've got you here, give me your, social media handles people can follow your amazing work. I know that you're out there.
Yeah, you can go to at Klaus Schwab Jr. on Instagram. And for example, this is something from my Instagram. I was making advertisements for Davos this year, and tickets are very reasonably priced. It's $250,000 to come to Davos. And I give a little hint of what is in Davos this year.
Hello, Instagram. It is your favorite oligarch, Klaus Schwab Jr. I want to remind you to get tickets for Davos this year. There are very good speakers. My father, Santa Klaus Schwab, Dick Cheney, and Herr Kissinger, and three or four lizards. And the topic for Davos this year is love is not real. Everything is a commodity. Lots of interesting information.
So thank you for making me this plugins.
You can catch Eric Hollerbach in the Highway Diaries wherever podcasts are served. And the contact information for all of his work will be found in the description below. Eric, you are a crazy person, but I mean that in the best way possible. And everybody, if you like this episode, take the additional step now of sharing it with your friends and family, because God knows the algorithms are not going to be gentle to us. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.